Hello, everyone. Welcome to Fearless Parent Radio, the thinking person's weekly dose of empowered, unconventional, and evidence-based news about health, wellness, green living, and holistic parenting choices. I'm Carla Atherton, your Fearless Parent co-host today and director of the Lotus Health Project, lotushealthproject.com, and host of the biannual Children's and Teen Health Summit, childrenshealthsummit.com, and Children's Health Advocate. I am passionate about helping people and their children to empower themselves through education, information, and creative inspiration. Today, I'll be speaking with Emily Roberts about girls and self-expression. Emily Roberts, M.A., LPC, is a psychotherapist, parenting consultant, and educational speaker and author. She created the Guidance Girl brand to help empower and educate girls on how to feel confident, build self-esteem, and develop communication skills. Roberts is aware of the challenges faced by both teens and women and has built a practice by positioning herself as a therapeutic mentor and consultant. She's an intensively trained dialectical behavior therapist and leads groups for young adults in New York City at Harstein Psychological Services. She's a guest contributor for Dr. Drew On Call on HLN and speaks about mental health and self-esteem in the media. As a contributing author for HealthyPlace.com, Roberts writes the weekly blog Building Self-Esteem and is also a parenting consultant and blogger for the Neurogistics Corporation. Roberts is co-founder of The Talking Room, a workshop program in Austin, Texas, that helps girls ages 5 to 11 develop self-esteem, confidence, leadership, and friendship skills, and teaches stress reduction activities with an emphasis on creating healthy boundaries with others and through technology. Welcome to Fearless Parent Radio, Emily.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's so great to have you. Like, I just love reading that bio. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's just so juicy, all the stuff you know. I love it. Love it. So thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Okay, so Emily, you do so many things with the youth and teens and like just the whole gamut of mental health, social health, and well-being. And so can you tell us just a little bit about you and why you do what you do?
Oh, sometimes I ask myself that. Why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? No, you know, I think it started out with me when I was younger, when I was a teenager myself, and realizing that I didn't have a safe space, really. I could talk to my friends, but, you know, let's be honest, they weren't making great decisions. And my parents sent me to therapy because we had moved across the country, and I was very angry about that. As you can imagine, at 13 years old, not the best time to move. At least back then, we didn't have the media that we have now to stay connected with other people, but it was really challenging. Mm-hmm. And I kept going to these therapists and people who were psychiatrists and psychologists who just kind of never really cared to listen to me. So I was like, you know, this has to change. So when I was in college, I met a mentor myself, a woman who was a really cool therapist. And I was like, you can be cool and a therapist. Like, you can help people and be cool.
Go figure.
It hadn't, you know, she was somebody who she was someone who I was able to feel safe with. And so I thought, hey, maybe I should start here. And what I realized is it's not just some kids. There are so many kids, so many young adults, so many people in general who want more genuine, more authentic person to speak to. And so that's why I started doing not only therapy, but talks, why I wrote my book. It's why I speak on particular topics in the media, because, you know, I'm not going to sugarcoat things necessarily. And a lot of people appreciate that. They also appreciate having somebody to talk to who's non-judgmental in a way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's why I got into it. And what I realized is, you know, there's so much work that can be done in an office, but my goodness, there's so much work that needs to be done on a bigger level, which is why I love doing these types of interviews and why I like doing talks and discussions with parents and with kids, because this is such a wide, there's so many issues, like you said, that kids are going through that we're just not giving them the space to talk about, nor do a lot of people have the time or the patience or the knowledge to help them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I'll tell you, we need more like you, Emily. Like there's just such a need for the work that you do.
Well, the hope is that someday we'll have more people doing this, and maybe we'll see what happens. You know, hopefully we'll be able to have kids having a better space and adults having a better space to do this. Because when we think about therapy, and that's, you know, one of the reasons I do, because, and I didn't even call myself a therapist. I mean, I am a licensed therapist, but I'm like, oh no, I'm just a mentor, because I don't, there's such a stigma around that to get someone into the door and be like, no, let's just talk about what's going on. Yeah. And I like that more too, because it kind of reduces the stress that people have around this. You know, I'm not going to, no one's perfect.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So, your most recent project, well, I guess one of them, I mean, you have projects all the time, but it's a book that you wrote called Express Yourself, A Teen Girl's Guide to Speaking Up and Being Who You Are. So what is the purpose of this book, and why did you feel that it needed to be written?
I wanted to write this book many years ago. And the truth is, this book, if it didn't say Teen Girl's Guide, I wish, you know, in a way, I kind of wish it was marketed for everybody, because I've had parents read it. I've had my friends and colleagues read it who don't have children. I have had parents who do have children read it. I have had men read it. It is filled with information on how to communicate effectively, which may sound kind of like easy. Well, of course, you know how to communicate effectively, but let's be honest. All of us have made mistakes in some way, or all of us go through some of these weird habits that we have that aren't, maybe not weird, they're just not effective, right? Mm-hmm. Responding to an email a certain way, you know, feeling frustrated or upset after talking to somebody and wishing that you handled the situation better. This book is full of interpersonal effectiveness skills that help in scripts and reasons like to use the scripts. And, you know, the reason I did this though is because so many people would come to me with the same problems. Like, oh my gosh, my friend said this to me. I don't know how to respond back. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it's not like, oh, here's a book for that necessarily, but there is an area in here. Like, what's the goal? You know, a lot of people respond impulsively, and in today's society, in today's culture, most people are really stuck in this more emotionally minded response system where we just respond out of frustration or ease or whatever. We're walking and we just want to get an email out, but we don't think about how that maybe hurts our relationships with other people. And it does.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So, not everyone is going to therapists, right? Like sometimes you have a lot of kids, like you have people in your groups, but then a book will reach those other people that aren't really reaching out in that way. Maybe
this, yeah. Well, this book isn't just for any, this book is for anybody. You don't have to be in therapy to need this book. I mean, how many people are who are listening have sent an email where they're like, oh, maybe I should have worded that differently. I hope this person's not mad at me, or sent a text and gotten, or received a text and been like, okay, what is the person's intention? Oh my gosh, are they mad at me? When you've gotten into like more of an anxiety, based mood because of that, right?
Yeah.
Or you think about, well, you know, my kid keeps doing this, or my partner keeps doing X, Y, or Z, and we're talking about it all the time, but nothing's changing.
Yeah.
We all can use everyone, even my best friends and myself. Sometimes I have to think about, okay, wait a second, am I being effective? Am I actually being confident when I'm communicating? Do I feel good about this conversation? I have to pause sometimes and do the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So I think everyone can benefit, especially when if parents and kids, it's not a book that's like written like, okay, you need to do X, Y, or Z. It's very casually based. Like, hey, so your friend's doing this and that makes you feel this way. Or that we're using real stories from real girls. And quite to be honest, I had a lot of my clients edit this book before I even, so they could make sure that it sounded appropriate and it was appropriate for kind of millennials and teens.
Right. Sure. And then, so, but really the book is actually written like in a way that it's written for teens, but then you've noticed that everybody can use it, right? So it's accessible to that age group, like the writing in it.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Of course. It's very accessible for teens. Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
But so, I think about too, like when you think about that, the chapters are like what? Digital drama and texting troubles, friendship troubles, peer stuff. We as adults have the same thing, like how to say no to a dinner party.
Yeah.
Right. That's not in the book necessarily, but how to say no when you really want to say yes because you're afraid, but like how to say no and do it effectively and so you don't feel bad and they don't hopefully don't get mad at you.
Yes.
That's the idea that we can all learn. And most of us didn't learn this growing up. There wasn't a class in school that was like, let's talk about emotions and communication.
Right. Yeah, exactly. There wasn't at all. And so, okay, so let's get into the book. Let's get into like, you know, systematically go through sections of the book so we can give, you know, people that are listening like really good idea of what the topics are that you tackle in the book and some, maybe some practical strategies and that kind of thing they can actually kind of use today. So how about the first thing let's do is communicating with confidence.
Well, yeah, we just kind of touched on that too.
Yes, you know,
I'm going to go back to it because it's so important. One of the things that I learned, and I would say we see more now in the news, but it's happening, right? We see all these scary things in the news where, oh, kids are sexting or kids are getting depressed or they're committing suicide because of the texting and all that other stuff. This is actually happening. I see this every single day. And that's why I wrote this book about 7 years ago before we even had like an iPhone 4, I imagine. I don't even know what phone we were on back then. But before we had the ability to send messages the way that we do now, we could certainly do picture messages and stuff like that, but it wasn't as quick. Yeah. I had so many girls coming in, young, good, I say good girls, as in they were doing really well in a variety of areas of life, right? They really were. Some of them were doing a lot of religious stuff. Some of them were doing, you know, community service. I had these girls all coming in because they got caught sexting or sending naked pictures of themselves. And these are girls between the ages of 12 and 17.
Whoa.
And I was like, what is going on here? You know, this, when I was this age, I like had a telephone in my room that if I was bad or I did something wrong, if I did something that deserved a consequence, I don't think it was bad. That would be removed pretty quickly, right? Yeah. Like parents had no problem taking away these things. And now what I see is parents have such a challenging time, a lot of parents, not all of them, taking the phone away or taking the computer away. And I'm not saying that that's necessarily the fix or the cure-all for this, but it's like, you know, this device is much more dangerous than many parents will want to believe, quite frankly.
So that's
kind of why I wanted to put this information out there, so kids would hopefully stop or at least pause before they decide to make a decision that could affect them for the rest of their lives.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a burning question I have, and I actually have the same problem. Why do we have such trouble taking that away?
It's because we're on our phones too. And there's a few things that I think. One is that we know that we don't always handle technology appropriately. No one does. I might say to everyone, all our listeners, I'm like, yeah, you know, but don't put your phone on the table. And sometimes my phone's at the table because I have to answer calls from if a client calls, because I usually have hours that are reserved for them. Right. However, you know, sometimes we do use our phones at the tables, right? That's a great idea. Let's not, but sometimes we do. And I will be the first to admit that sometimes I do. I try my best not to, if I can. But the other piece to this too is parents like, well, gosh, if I don't give my kid their phone, then how am I going to get in touch with them?
Yeah.
Well, there are still phones that you can get in touch with them on. They can still go to the school nurse and use that phone if needed.
Yep.
But then the other piece is, how will my kid respond if I take it away? Uh-huh. Do I want to deal with this outburst or behavioral burst, you know? And it doesn't have to be all or nothing. It also can be that parents can really be more aware of what their kids are doing on their phones and have more parental controls on there. And it's a lot of work, which is why we don't want to do it. Look, I mean, it's a lot of work for me to, you know, get my laundry and all these other things done during the week too. And I mean that, like, because things take a lot of work and parenting takes a lot of work sometimes. And we just sometimes don't have the energy to put everything in place that we need to, or that experts say that maybe we should do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. So this makes me think about, like, you know, the issues of things like privacy, you know, like the telephone, like, you know, the old school way, like, you know what, you and I grew up, you know, we'd pick up the phone and call people and then we'd hang up after we're done talking. Right. But there was no, like, so with the phone, it's almost like, you know, it's like their diary or something. Like, it's like, you know, when you have these,
but that's the part, right? Because nothing, if you're texting your friends and that's your diary, it's not safe. They can forward that picture or the, you can take a photo of whatever. Even Snapchat, you can take photos of. Just FYI, all the parents whose kids have told them that Snapchat is safe, there are so many ways that, first of all, it's not safe. Those pictures disappear allegedly to where? Thin air? No, they go into a vault. There's pictures. Snapchat headquarters, or the people who own it, have said these pictures still exist. Everything on here still exists. And people can take pictures of that still, even without the person knowing. There's a hack. I found this out the other day. There's a hack for that. Regardless, if you're doing stuff on your phone, right, unless it's in the notes section of your phone, nothing is private.
Yeah.
Therefore, if it could get you in trouble as this child, or it can get the parents in trouble who own the phone, who own the IP address, then it's actually not private. There's a big, way big difference between the journal that you hid under your pillow. For me, I hid it like underneath my bed in a box full of other things within another box. But there was a reason I hid it, right? I didn't put it out there for the world to see.
Exactly. So maybe there's that. Maybe we need to be encouraging that kind of behavior rather than, like, you know, using their phone as a way to kind of like express themselves. You know, it's I don't know.
A lot of times parents don't want to, or excuse me, kids don't want to hear from their parents.
Yeah.
They either should know or they do know, which is, this isn't a safe way to do it. But what they do need, but parents do need to have the conversation about, is here are the apps that we're not cool with. Here are the things that we're not going to be okay with. And if you choose to use it this way, because you guys have the access to Apple ID, if you choose to purchase these apps, then we're going to have to talk about how to use the phone, right? Yeah. Effectively. There are other options. And the reason why is because it's not because we don't trust you. It's because we don't trust other people on these sites.
Yeah.
What's going to happen if you're, you know, your daughter's, you know, doing everything right on her phone. She's communicating with all the people that, you know, and one of her friends sends her a picture of something inappropriate. Now that picture is on your phone. Yeah. Right. And if she sends it to anybody else, she is actually could get in trouble by the school or whoever, if it is a picture that of something inappropriate. The reason I say that is because I sat, believe it or not, next to a superintendent of a school on a plane recently that had a sexting scandal where they had to, they had to suspend, I think 20 or 30 students. And we were talking about this and he's like, we had to go in the police to find the kids who had shared the messages.
Yeah.
Because that's considered bullying and that's considered being part of the problem.
Wow.
Even though they weren't trying to hurt the other person's feelings, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's just amazing. Like what we're dealing with now that we have this technology, because it's just so, it's huge. It just introduces so many aspects. And so, I want to kind of continue with this sort of train of thought about that phone and how, like, you mentioned that, you know, like the kids might get pretty upset and parents might not want to deal with that. Why are they getting so upset about this, a phone being taken away? And it seems to me that maybe it's connection. Like they rely on so much to connect with other kids and other people.
Well, let's give them some credit here too. You know, they're right. When we would go home after school, I would call my friends on the phone because I didn't get to see them during the day. Like maybe I had one class with a friend or maybe I didn't, but you know, as they get older, they're in class or they have different lunches. They don't get to see their friends all the time. So how do they communicate or feel connected? It's not that they're just texting. They're in text groups or they're on Facebook groups. I have parents that get so mad at their kids for being online and like they're actually, and sometimes they'll show me what they're doing and there's like study groups on there that they're involved in and Skype groups and things. So I want to make sure there's more of a middle path response with kids. Like, I understand you need this. I don't want to take it all away from you because that feels horrible. And it also feels like you're really disconnecting them from their entire universe.
Yes.
So it's more like maybe we need to set boundaries if they're doing something inappropriate, or maybe we need to set boundaries to begin with so they don't get immersed in this. Give them some credit there too. Like, this is the culture. This is the way that everyone and teachers and schools and adults kind of buy into that as well. Like, they put all their homework online these days. I was helping a girl organize her homework recently, and I'm like, I'm sorry, you have to go to 3 different websites to get your homework because they don't even tell them in class. They post it at the end of the school day.
Yeah.
Online.
Yeah, right. Because so now they're actually forced to use this technology because it's easier for, you know, the teachers to organize everybody.
Allegedly, it's easier. We'll see, you know, see how that works out.
Yeah,
I agree. And so they're kind of in this, they're just trying to have to do this. So the role of the parent, I think, is to be empathic to that. And at the same time, concerned about how much time they're on there. If they're huddled in a room on their phone for 4 hours, that's not healthy for anybody in their brain chemistry. It's just not. Yeah. We know that what happens is you just become more, your brain actually is not healthy doing that. If we have short breaks, that's a lot better, right?
Yeah. Well, what about like another solution is not just to like, reduce or like, you know, keep a handle on the phone, because it's like, it's still a lot of work to do that. And even for the kids, because they don't really, they're trying, but this impulse, you know, to connect that way. And I wonder about like, you know, encouraging different ways of connecting with other kids, like get out there, go somewhere, like, you know, meet them for coffee or like, you know, or whatever they're or tea or whatever they're doing, you know, like encouraging that kind of behavior more so than, and then the need for that connection through their devices is maybe lessened a little bit. I don't know. What do you think about stuff like that?
Yes. And ideally I would love it if they were hanging out like that all the time. These kids are so busy nowadays where, every after school activity that they're doing, or it's not like they're just going home and getting on their phones. I think for a lot of kids going home and doing all their homework or kids things going on. So certainly making a date to like do that, like, oh, we're going to go to the mall or something like that. Or if they even go to the mall anymore, they do, but we're going to go have coffee or whatever. That's great. And at the same time, they still like that might be the only way they connect with that one friend because she's so busy or he's so busy, right? So they may need time to do that. But I also think it's about like saying, look, let's try 15 minutes away from your phone for homework and seeing if you get more done, trying to help them set these boundaries. Because you're right, what's happening here though, between the ages of about 12 and 17, a little bit later even, is a huge, huge growth span for their brain. And so they're more impulsive. There's more gray matter. Things are moving rapidly. We have more hormones, you know, firing on all over the place. But the truth is their brains are growing. And so giving them a device to let them be sucked into isn't always the healthiest thing because they are very impulsive to begin with. I mean, if every parent for just a second thought about the stuff that they did at 16 and 17 and even 15 years old, we could all maybe cringe a little bit. Like maybe I shouldn't have gotten in the car with that person who just got their license.
Yeah.
Right. And I knew on some level that I probably shouldn't, but my impulse control was lessened because of this age of my life. And that is the truth. You can look at any of the research that's out there. The developing teen brain is more, for lack of better words, selfish, because they're kind of thinking of themselves.
Yeah.
They are more likely to engage in impulsive behaviors. They're easily swayed to do things that perhaps they wouldn't have done. You know, what happened to my fifth grader or sixth grader who could totally stand up for herself? They want to fit in. That's part of their agenda right now. And if you think from a biological standpoint, as their brains are developing, they feel more insecure. So trying to fit in is, there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that we can be like, oh, just, you know, you don't need to be friends with them. No, but seriously, they feel like they need to have connection with people, like a very, very deep place. It doesn't mean that we have to, you know, take all that away, or we have to say they have to go have coffee, but we can say, I understand that you want to hang out with your friends, and we got to limit it a little bit, right? It doesn't mean we're taking it all away, but we've got to have a little bit of a balance here, especially if your kid's huddled up in her room for 6 hours on her phone. That's just not healthy for anybody.
Yeah, and that desire to, like, just, you know, throw them all onto the driveway and drive over them all is really not going to help.
No, because then you're going to have to deal with the aftermath, which is not just picking up the pieces, which is them being like, well, now what am I supposed to do? I can't get in touch with my friends, so... Right?
You know, because that whole world, like, it's just like, you know, sometimes, I mean, I'm pretty sure a lot of parents listening are just like, I just wish it was over. I didn't have to deal with it at all. But it is a reality for us. I totally get that. But, you know, just, that's a hard impulse just to just say, look, this is just way too much to have to sort out. And let's just, you know, go back to the old days.
Well, let's take an approach like that's smart and savvy for them and for us too. Like, hey, you know what? No, and I've parents fight me on this all the time. And I've got to tell you, I wish that someone would have taught me this.
Okay.
I turn my phone on. I turn it off at night, but I also had sometimes don't, you know what I mean? It's like, I have this urge to kind of want to check social media or check my email, and I'm an adult. My brain is pretty much developed, I would imagine. I hope so at this point anyways, because I'm way beyond that kind of threshold for where it should be developed. Anyway, so but it's very challenging to fight that urge, right? And we're adults. So teenagers, oh, I need it for my alarm clock. No, there are alarm clocks.
No.
Oh, I need it because my friend's in crisis. That is a reason I might give my kid a phone, quite frankly.
Yeah.
There's the other thing, and we'll talk about that in a second, but here's the other piece. They don't need to get dependent or continue to be dependent on having this device to put them to sleep, because as the research also shows, it is very, very, very unhealthy for their brain. They are not getting enough sleep. They are not, their sleep's disrupted.
Yeah.
With 45 minutes before they're going to bed, looking at the screen, even if they have whatever they're saying, that blue light inhibitor.
Yep.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all, because you're still activating the neurons and the neurotransmitters that are excitatory.
Mm.
So we have a lot more dysregulated sleep patterns. We also have a lot more dysregulated kids these days, to be honest with you.
Well, that affects their physical health, right?
Oh, 100%. I mean, why aren't they focusing? Well, they're not getting enough sleep, or they're not getting quality sleep, or they're too hyper-focused on what's going on. I wish parents would just do themselves and their kids a favor and say, sorry, unless it's an emergency, you can't sleep with your phone tonight.
Yeah.
Because what's going to happen when they're in college? How do we expect them to behave when they, you know, are glued to their phones, then in college glued to their phones? I mean, sure, we can earn up to that, you know, when they're having their phones maybe plugged up in their rooms. But most kids appreciate the break. I make the kids plug their phones in my office, plug them in because I have a charger in there, and it's by my side of the office. And so I'm like, someone's texting you. Do you want it? They're like, no, thank you. No. Like, it's really a relief for them.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Because, and it's like a, you know, well, I mean, let's just talk about that for a second. I didn't even have this on the list here of stuff I want to talk to you about, but addictions, right? So this is very addictive. This is a very addictive thing, you know, the whole checking in, like, you know, or you see kids like driving down the street and they're all like on their devices. And you can't even just look out the window anymore. You know, what is that,
well,
Emily?
I always ask, what's the function for the behavior, right?
Yeah.
And I was talking to somebody recently about this, and it was interesting because why do why do we want to be absorbed in somebody else's life or in your life on social media? Why not? Because it may be the reality is it's more interesting or it's easier to escape from than your thoughts. So a lot of times people are doing this because A, they don't want to be disconnected, right? And disconnected as in from what's going on. That's certainly part of it. The other one is they don't know how to actually put the brakes on that, because pausing and not being a part of the conversation makes them feel insecure, makes them feel like they're not connected. But guess what the reality is? Pausing and not being connected is so awesome.
Yeah.
People start to be like, wait, where are you? You have a life outside of this group conversation. Uh-huh. What are you doing? And when I explain that to kids, they're like, I never thought of it that way. Because a lot of times, if you think about it, their brains aren't thinking of it that way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
And I think for us as adults, why do we need to be connected all the time? Well, there's so many people that need us, but so many people that in our lives, like physically, that need us. So is your brain. Like, your brain needs you to calm down. Mindfulness studies show that it's so important to step away from the devices for a little while to get oxygen to your brain, because what happens is it excretes too much dopamine, like you said, addiction. So what we do is we become dependent behaviorally and neurochemically on checking our device for satisfaction, which is so wrong on so many levels. It may provide quick, instant gratification, right? But it doesn't provide long-term self-care.
Yeah.
It doesn't provide long-term rest for your brain. And like, even sitting and watching TV is a different, channel in your, it doesn't create the same dopamine response.
Right.
Sitting down and drinking tea and noticing your tea for 2 minutes is way healthier if you can take a 2 minute break from it. And one of the things I added in the book that was so important is this pause skill, because what happens when you respond right away? For any of us, you misspell something, you use autocorrect, or you say something and when you're not feeling very confident about it, or you say something that could easily be misconstrued. I got an email the other day from a doctor who I admire, a doctor I like.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, is she mad at me? Like, I haven't talked to her in a while. Why is she responding so curtly, you know? And probably because she was busy. When I got on the phone with her, everything was fine. And I asked her, I was like, so is everything okay? Like, did you get my last email? Was that okay? She's like, oh, I've been so rushed. I've been writing emails so fast. I didn't even read through it. Oh my gosh, did I spell something wrong? And I was like, oh no, just wanted to verify that everything was okay.
Yeah.
Because it was like she clearly didn't have the time, or she didn't take the time to read through it before she pressed send.
Yeah. 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 So, yeah. So there's a whole other thing about communicating, you know, when you're communicating in that way that people need to kind of learn, I guess, or understand. So, okay. So let's move on to the next thing. Okay. Well, there's like a zillion things I want to talk to you about. How about the topic of family frustrations and building better bonds?
Where do you want to start there? Exactly. I think a lot of the, I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about now, but also I think it's where parents and kids. One of the best things I've done, I feel like, at least with some of my families that are really fighting a lot about whether it be someone's on their phone or someone's doing X, Y, or Z. One thing that I've encouraged is, okay, wait, let's get kids over here, parents over here, and let's come up with some ideas, right? So both people, both sides of the equation here feel like they have some agency in the conversation, or at least in the outcome. So mom says, oh my God, you're on your computer too much. The kid's like, but mom, this is how I'm communicating with all my friends. This is also, I'm doing my schoolwork. I don't really understand why you're so mad at me. Well, because you're not communicating with the family. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So maybe the mom also needs to hear what the kid's doing online too. Mm-hmm. So one of the skills in the book I have is like asking, showing, and it's called the ask skill. ASK. So asking, showing, and knowing. It's like, okay, instead of assuming that your daughter or son is on the computer to avoid you or to piss you off, for lack of a better word, they're not doing that. They don't really, probably don't want to create drama with you. Let's be honest. There's enough drama in their life already.
Uh-huh.
Instead of assuming that they're doing this to avoid you or for whatever reason, let's ask, hey, what are you doing on there? I'm curious. I know a lot of kids are online these days with their homework, but can you show me kind of the stuff that you're doing online? You don't have to show me everything, but like, how is your chat room work for school? Because there are chat rooms for school. How does this homework thing work? And you know what? Let them show you, because when they show you, they feel more supported, A, with you, like you hear them and you're connecting with them, and B, they feel like they're kind of the expert, which makes them feel more confident, right?
Right.
Maybe you say, I don't have time for all this. Take 10, 15 minutes. Can you show me how to use these particular apps or whatever you're doing? I just want to be more in the know. My friends are using these things now, and I think that you're probably more of an expert than I am. Give them some credit.
Yeah.
Rather than arguing about what the problem is, can we actually come to an agreement, like as parents, we don't even really know what the problem is. The problem may be that you don't like that your daughter's on the computer, but the problem for your daughter is she has to be on the computer half the time for schoolwork, right?
Yeah.
So we don't even have the same problem.
Yeah.
Right? So why don't we come up with the same problem before we start arguing?
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking about these kids that are like, okay, I see right through what you're doing, mom. You just want to know what I'm doing.
Because, but here's the thing, but they also, because I don't understand what you are doing.
Yes.
I have my kids show me stuff all the time. I'm
Yeah.
like, wait a second. You're telling me that you, like, for example, this was a couple weeks ago. This girl's like, well, I have such a hard time organizing my homework. And I was like, why? Don't you have a planner? Not, in a bad way, but like, what are you using? And she showed me the three different websites she has to log on to, and one of them she has to do her homework on. And I
Yeah.
go, oh my gosh. I'm so sorry if I didn't sound empathic before I said this, where I go, this is so stressful.
Yeah.
And she was like, right? What was it? And I was like, okay, so how can I help you with this now? I know that I see that you have to do this all the time. Like, what's a good way that we can come up with a, that you and I both can come up with a way that works for you to check this without stressing out, because she was
Yeah.
getting overwhelmed. And just that conversation was validating for her and I to have a few ideas down on paper, physical paper, about how she could be mindfully checking this rather than checking them all at once, or what time she should check it, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And parents, they may see my kids thinking, oh, whatever, mom, I'm just trying to see what I'm doing. Yeah, because if I don't, then I'm going to be more on your back, essentially.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to reduce my own anxiety,
Yeah.
and I'm trying to increase your livelihood here, because
Yes.
otherwise I'm going to be in your room every 15 minutes. So it's up to you. You want to show me, or you want me to sneak in?
Yeah, exactly, because this is not good when I'm stressed. Well,
What?
and a lot of this stuff has to do with stress. I mean, all this stuff we're talking about is very highly stressful. The checking in, the addictive behaviors, the not sleeping, all this, like, this cascade of stress the next day, or not being able to make those clear boundaries, communication when it's poor, it's extremely stressful. And like, there's another thing that you talk about is digital drama. That's like stress at its utmost, wouldn't
Well,
you
it stresses
say?
us out as parents and adults. I mean, how many times have we been in conversations on text or an email where someone responds in a way that's ineffective, and you're like, oh my gosh, do I call this person up on
Yeah.
the phone and ask them? I usually do, but a lot of people don't, because now you're kind of scared,
Yeah.
right? And so I just say I usually do, only because I figured out for me that the texting back and forth caused me more anxiety. The
Yes.
dot dot dots, like, what are they going to say now? Versus,
Yeah.
hey, I'm so sorry if we had a miscommunication. That was not my intention, et cetera, et cetera. And that usually clears it up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But people are so darn defensive these days and feel like they can say whatever they want when they're behind the screen. The truth is, picking up the phone and talking to people, or at least responding when you're in a not stressed out state of mind, responding after you put the phone down for 5 minutes and done something else completely to distract your mind, seriously. And it's so hard to do, but what happens when you do that? Your brain starts to have oxygen again. You start
Right.
breathing. You're
Yeah.
not in a fight or flight state of mind. And what occurs is you're more likely to have a good conversation with somebody, or an effective conversation where you figure out what the problem was, rather than having a fight that goes back and forth. Digital drama is back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, no matter how you put it. It could be cyberbullying, it could be all these other things. But teaching kids, like, hey, how do you feel right now? You're waiting for her to respond. What's your anxiety like? A 7 out of 10? Yeah, I would be too.
Yeah.
Do you want to maybe pick up a phone call? If she doesn't answer, then you know what? You're at this point, you're winning this battle, and we can wait for her to settle down. Because you can't talk to somebody who is in an emotional state of mind and expect them to reason with you. You can't text somebody either.
Yeah. Okay, well, so another thing that you talk about in your book is the social butterfly. Can you explain that, what that is?
That is the wanting to be accepted, or even the kids that say, I don't want to be accepted. I like where I am right now in my group of friends, but wanting that, they want friends. And
Yeah.
again, biologically, what they want to do is they want to be connected with peers their age. Why? Because that keeps them safe. If we
Yep.
really go back to biology
Yep.
and you think of like a tribal culture, right, which is what we are in, that's what our brains are created to do, is be in a tribe. That's where emotion comes from. Like, so if somebody leaves the tribe, or someone does something in the tribe that hurts you, you're going to be angry at them. Why? Because you're sensitive? No, because you're scared and they hurt you. But they're close to you. Of course you should be angry. Should
Yeah.
you respond with a mean text message? Probably not, because now you're part of the problem. But again, that's going a little bit further. Here's the deal. They want to be connected with each other. They need that. They need that for so to feel socially, empowered in some ways, and feel safe. However, when you take a teenager's mind and you put them around people who may not be the best influences, or people who don't know what they're doing, or don't know the ramifications of their decision making, we've got a little bit of a problem.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's why I think for parent, that book, that part of the book is really strategically right after digital drama and texting troubles, because most of what's happening that's causing them to want to do stuff isn't just in face-to-face conversations. It's like, hey, we're going to this party. You should totally come. Like for the girl who hasn't seen her friends all week, even though she doesn't want to drink, allegedly, or she says she might feel more inclined to want to drink so she could see her friends, right? Mm-hmm. So it's about explaining to kids and parents, like, look, the truth is they're not always trying to do this to hurt you or hurt themselves. They're trying to do a lot. They're doing a lot of this to survive in high school or in middle school, but it doesn't mean that they have to do it. It means here in that particular chapter, I give them some pretty clear reasons why it maybe isn't a good idea to try some of these substances, or a really good reason why it is to go with what the friend, you know, to go through with what their friends want to do, and ways to get out of it assertively and effectively. I wish someone would have told me that I had an option of being like, oh my gosh, I have so much homework tonight. I can't go. I wish I could, but my parents are totally on me. That would never cross my mind at 15 or 16, right? Because it wasn't something I thought I was able to do. But you guys, call me later and maybe we can hang out this weekend, right? Yeah. At least I am not doing something in that moment, which is likely true. We're not lying. Or, hey, my parents are really, you know, they're going to probably know where I'm at because they have this thing on my phone. I can't go with you guys. I can't sneak out. Wow. Would that have saved me from perhaps something that I did when I was younger? No, maybe. I didn't do that very often because I was too scared of getting caught. But I know a lot of kids that did. Yeah. Right?
So you're saying
and so, but giving kids a means to be able to communicate assertively and get out of situations is so important. Because we tell kids all the time, don't do it. But how do you get out of the situation when your best friend, the guy you have a crush on, and this whole group of popular kids is saying, come to the party, it's going to be so much fun.
Yeah.
Like, really, don't do it, or social suicide in some ways.
Right.
How to do it to keep your confidence and be assertive, and also make yourself actually feel better for not going, which sounds so silly, but the truth is when you talk to kids about this, so wait, you didn't get to go, and the guy's still calling you. Huh, isn't that interesting? You didn't risk getting yourself in trouble and grounded for a month, and the guy seems to like you more now. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Well, and
the truth is, if they really cared about you, they probably wouldn't want to get in trouble anyways.
Well, that's true. I mean, isn't that the thing? It's not even just like, so I hear you talking about a couple of different things here. So it's like this whole, the survival, you know, surviving in this teen culture or whatever, or you know, mm-hmm. school groups or whatever. And it just seems to me like part of like the adult in me resists that so strongly that, you know, like that whole idea of just kind of like trying to survive. And, you know, like, I mean, you know, you just think like honesty maybe is like the best thing, but I totally get that these kids aren't even, not that they're being dishonest. It's just that the whole, the reason why they're saying this or that is so that they can, you know, save face or so they're not like, you know, committing social suicide or whatever. But I mean, and then we talk about on the other side where it's really like more deep relationships with people that if they really cared about you, they're not going to say, oh, you can't come to this party, you're not cool, or not this or that, or whatever. So it's like, it's almost like we're dealing with two different things. It's kind of like surface relationships.
It's a dialectic.
Deeper. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's, you know what, so often we can't usually get to the deeper issues until we address the surface relationships, because in their minds at that point, this is all that matters. Uh-huh. Or not all that matters. This is a very, very big drama-filled situation that I don't know what to do about it.
Yeah.
And being mindful to that, because yes, as adults, we're like, are you kidding me? This is what you're worried about today? Like when in reality, we just had to deal with so many other things that are like big adult problems. But yeah, that's their reality.
Yeah.
And that's their, you know, not going to this party and not having friends and not being able to sit somewhere at the lunch table is so overwhelming for them. And it's not that's not just it. It's also like, well, then what am I going to do? What if he doesn't like me and likes my friend more? It's a lot of these insecurities that come up with being this age. The other thing is helping them through that and saying, you know what? I totally understand. I was in your shoes, because we were, you know, if your parents take a good look back, oh yeah, none of us did this adolescence thing splendidly. There's no way we got through this unscathed. Yeah, let's be honest. And so saying, I don't get it because I'm not in your shoes, but I understand that you really want to go to this party. And, you know, it's up to the parent if they want to let them go. But quite frankly, knowing, and, you know, some parents do let them go for a little while, which is interesting. And it can be okay if the kid is scared enough not to do anything bad, truthfully,
right.
which is what I try to promote that. Like, okay, so here's what's gonna happen. We're going to pick you up and we're going to smell your right, and et cetera, et cetera. But the other piece is you said it. It's confusing as an adult because you're like, well, why does this matter so much? Shouldn't we hear more about our grades and what we're doing? It's actually being very mindful in their case. They are being mindful in some regard. I'm worried about the now. I'm worried about myself socially right now.
Uh-huh.
And I want to fit in. And so if we can say, totally, wow, I get that. And let's talk about some of the other stuff. Let's actually go to the future for a second. What could possibly happen? And in the book, I do that. What are the pros and cons of going and doing this now? What are the pros and cons in 2 years? What are the pros and cons in 3 days?
Yeah.
I give them a lot of resources to try and think a little bit more about what will happen afterwards and what this says about their friends.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to romantic relationships too. Like, it's amazing to me, you know, how many girls and boys put up with a lot less than they're worth digitally and in person,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that fear of they're not going to like me.
Yeah.
What I want you guys to all think about too, which is so fascinating, most of these people online who are so aggressive, some of their friends are like, you should do this. You get that child in the room and you have them over for a sleepover, sweet as can be, you would never ever believe that this is the person. Mm-hmm. So it's also about saying, you know, what did they say to you? How did you interpret that? Because that's their communication. You and I say, let's have a talk. You and I are talking on the phone. Your child saying they're talking to somebody means they're texting or they're, you know, IMing.
Yeah. 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 I suppose so. You know, they kind of have a chance to, they look at the surface and then they'll go deeper when they're ready. You know, they will.
When they're validated though, they're validated. So, and a lot of parents are like, that shouldn't matter. I don't understand why that's a big deal. I told you, you shouldn't do that. Rather than telling them what they already know, because your kids are not stupid, I promise. They're not. They can probably rewire my computer or my iPhone in like five, not rewire, what am I talking about? Reset it.
Yeah.
And they do. I know that a lot of my kids help me with some of my apps, right? They're smart kids. Their brains are just not completely developed. The best thing you can do is validate the struggle. You can't go. I'm so sorry. I wish we could let you go. It's just, we're afraid you might get in trouble.
Yes.
Not from us, like, you get in trouble and you really wanted to go to that thing this summer and we don't want that to be it, you know, if it's on your permanent record and you can't go.
Yeah.
But your friends are really pushing you.
Yeah.
It must suck. Is there anything I can do? That's validation 101. That's biting your tongue and like, why do you care? Your friend's not very nice anyways. Don't give your opinion right now. Validate and then she'll come to you or come to you.
Yeah, that's a hard thing to do, but so important. So, so important. Pardon me?
No, it builds connection. I want to say half the time to my kids, like, oh, you're joking. You did not do that. Why would you do that? Oh, my gosh. Like, with my eyes wide open, like, please don't ever do that. It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard, right? If I said that, they would lose all trust in me.
Yeah.
So I have to take a breath, and I have to be mindful, and I have to. So how come that was so hard for you to say no to? I'm curious. What was behind that? That's interesting to me.
Yeah.
Or I might say, it sounds really like that girl was not being very nice. Sorry to hear that. How do you feel? Your kids might look at you and roll their eyes, but guess what? You're not judging. They're not saying, oh my gosh, my parents are coming in my room and they're telling me what to do again.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so Emily, we're having a little bit of technical difficulties because it's like cutting out and everything. I'm pretty sure everybody's.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's not you. It's this connection. I don't know. Sometimes, you know, the connection is not a friend. But we're just gonna keep going to the end of this this show here, and hopefully, I think everybody's gonna be able to catch mostly everything. But I apologize to the audience if you're having a little bit of trouble with catching everything Emily's saying. But I think that we're doing all right. So to keep going. Emily, you mentioned romantic relationships just briefly there. Is there anything else you'd like to expand on regarding romantic relationships that you felt was really important to include in that book?
I put a lot of the obvious stuff in here that I tell my clients, but I think that a lot of parents hopefully tell their kids, reinforcing like what is a healthy relationship versus what's a one-sided relationship. What if somebody's really nice to you online, but not in person? But this also goes, I think this all really connects because the truth is what we're trying to do is teach our kids this information before it happens, just like sex ed. I mean, in all honesty, we have to give our kids the resources or the tools or at least the info before they're faced with it. Otherwise, they're getting information from their friends or from the people that are trying to push them to do things that might not be safe, right?
Yeah.
And so in the book, I, especially when it came to romantic stuff, I wrote about what your rights are in a relationship, what your rights are as like what you deserve in a relationship, right? And when people are maybe not respecting your rights or your values or whatever that even means, if you're feeling uncomfortable and someone's still pushing you, not just to, you know, have sex necessarily, to do things that you maybe send a picture or to do things that you're not comfortable with. How do you get out of that without being like, oh, now you're the prude, which by the way is not a bad term, but teens seem to think it is. Right. But how do you get out of this situation without keeping your social status in a way? Like, that's not my thing. You know, there's ways to do this though, that you that is an adolescent, parents can feel confident. If they read through it, they'll see as well, there's a lot of tools in there. And in fact, on my website, theguidancegirl.com, you can download a free chapter of, I think, chapter 4 right now, which is the digital drama chapter. So you, if parents are interested or teens are interested or even professionals, they can look at, they can download that for free. And so they can kind of see how the writing is, because what it is, it's like, would you let your girlfriends be talked to that way or your friends be talked to that way? Probably not. It's more a lot of tools that are in here to help them think outside of the current situation, or at least if they're faced with that situation, to know what to say and to do, even though they may want to give in, that will have, but they, so they don't give in. Right. So it's kind of like you cannot give in and still be cool.
Yeah.
Or yeah, feel cool.
Yep. Okay. So, okay, and then the last thing I wanted to address is this subject, because we've got about 4 more minutes until the end of our interview here, and I would love for you to address, since we're talking about expressing yourself, the assertive you. Like, so tell me more about what you mean by, you know, how girls can be, and everybody, but more assertive.
Well, used to think that assertiveness, or at least I did for a long time, was kind of being rude in some way, saying how you feel or saying what you need, and being, it was not necessarily looked on as something positive. And in reality, it's the best thing we can do for ourselves, because other people cannot read your minds. They can't even half the time read your text messages and understand what you're saying, right? So the truth is being assertive is such a confident thing and such a self-respecting thing you can do for yourself, but also you're respecting other people by expressing what you need and what you would like. And it doesn't have to be done in a way where it's like, I need you to hang up the phone right now because I need to talk to you. No, that's kind of rude, but there's a really fine balance, and there's a great space for this of, hey, when you get off the phone, would you mind coming into my room? I just have a quick question for you. That's being assertive, right? And it may sound like, well, that's, how is that assertive? That's expressing what you need and what you want without creating a conflict with somebody else. Even people who are really making you mad or people who are really passive, being assertive with them can help your relationship with them, because they can understand and what you need and want, and hopefully be able to do something different, so it doesn't have to be such a, you know, there's no conflict there, right?
Yeah.
But I just noticed that there's so many people who are one or two extremes. They're either aggressive and respond impulsively in an aggressive way or a very rude way, which pushes people away, even though they might be a very sweet person. Yep. Or they're so passive, they have trouble making decisions and trouble trusting themselves and never really get an opportunity to build the framework for being a confident adult. And so I have friends, I don't know, where do you want to eat? I'm like, I don't really know right now because I'm in the middle of 15 things. But if you could give me like 3 options, I'd be so happy and I'll help you choose from there.
Okay.
Because then that's what I say, because it's like, you know what? I'm really in the middle of like 5 things, but I'd love to make a reservation with you and have dinner with you. Well, I don't know. It's like, I know you're trying to please me. So just pick 3 places that you're thinking of and I'll do that. Me, that's assertiveness, right?
Yeah, and it is.
It helps them too.
Exactly. And if you're clear and there's no like room for, you know, wondering, did somebody say this, blah, blah, blah. And, but sometimes, you know, Emily, sometimes people, that takes a while for them to get used to people who are actually just being assertive, like where they're saying, I don't know, you know, pick 3 things and I, you know, that kind of thing. Sometimes that'll even put people off.
It will. And the truth is the right people will stick around.
Yeah.
People it bothers won't. If you do it in a night, and if you do it in an appropriate way, which is what's in the book, the skills to do that. It's not like, hey, obviously you can't make a decision. I would never say that, right? But in my head, I'm thinking, okay, I know this is a hard decision for you to make, and I don't have a lot of time right now. So what I'm planning on doing is meeting you later. Just give me a few places and we can figure it out together. Does that sound like a good idea?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The other thing is, you know, one of the things we talked about before, and I know we have only a few minutes left, but when I said, maybe you can keep the kid's phone in their room if they're having a problem with a friend or a friend needs their help, because that is something that I also discuss in the book that happens all the time. Your kids are first responders. You may not know that yet, but they are. So if their friends are having a crisis, if their kids' parents are divorcing, if their kids are cutting or are suicidal, I'm sorry to say that they're going to they're going to them first.
Yep.
And so what that does is that means that if they can tell you, hey, so-and-so is having a really hard time right now and they trust you, and you let them use the phone or you check with them, hey, how'd that go, whatever, oh my God, the doors of connection and trust are going to grow so large, really. Because the thing is they're asserting themselves.
Yeah.
Mom, I really need to talk to so-and-so. It doesn't mean you're like, no, you're a child. You should handle that. Mom, I need to talk to so-and-so. And then you check in with her. Hey, do we need to call the police? Do we need to, what can we do to help you feel more comfortable? These, I know this is like a, not a, the best way to wrap up, but if your child is acting assertive, really try and listen, because they're really trying to be assertive. They're really trying to get you to hear, right? They're not trying to fight with you. They're not. That's not what their intention is.
Great. No, that's a perfect way to wrap up, Emily. Like, it's the perfect way to wrap up, because, you know, like, sadly, we're coming to the end of our show, but, you know, is there anything else you do have a few more minutes. If there's anything else you want to mention before we wrap up and add to that.
I think that, you know, we just live in a culture today where we're scared. All of us are scared. I get scared too over the news about suicide and cyberbullying, et cetera. Don't get sucked the news if you can avoid it, and at this there's a reason that you probably do get acted by that. It doesn't mean you forward that information to your kids or throw it on your kids, but express to your kids, show them how to express what express yourself really means. Like, hey, I've been watching all this stuff on the news lately about these kids who are getting, you know, this one app. Do you have that app? Like, I'm just concerned, like, not about you doing it necessarily, but like, what do you notice? Have any of your friends things? Have a conversation if you're certain emotion with your kid. They respect you more for it. You're not weak if you say, I'm concerned or I'm feeling a little anxious about this.
Yep.
You are interested in their lives, and that is the most, that's what they want.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're trying their best to make you proud. Half the time, you don't think so. I promise you that they're trying. Yep. They don't want to disappoint you.
Yep.
And they also want to know that you know what they're doing to a certain degree. They like to hide a lot of it. And if you catch it, that's a whole other conversation we can have in another interview. If you catch it, then that's important too. But let's be honest, why are they doing the things that they're doing? To feel connected to you and to their social group, and to also attempt to feel good about themselves.
Yeah, feel good about themselves, you said?
Yeah, feel good about themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this has been awesome, Emily. And I apologize to everybody listening for some of the technical difficulties, but I think we managed to get most of it, what you've been saying. But if you want to know more about what Emily does and how she can help you and your family, go to guidancegirl.com. It's guidancegirl.com, right?
Guidancegirl.com. And you can find me on social media at guidancegirlm. And then also, the book is on Amazon. It's at local bookstores. You can find it there.
Okay, and the book is called Express Yourself, A Teen Girl's Guide to Speaking Up and Being Who You Are.
Yes.
And so, oh, yes. Okay, so Emily, thank you for coming on Fearless Parent Radio. And
thanks for having me.
Yes, yes, yes. And to our wonderful listeners, tell us what you think and comment on fearlessparent.org. Thank you for listening to Fearless Parent Radio, and be sure to tune in next week. So information about future shows and archives are available on fearlessparent.org, progressiveradionetwork.fm, and on iTunes and Podbean. So this is Carla Atherton. Be fearless, everyone. And